Welcome to Health Hats, learning on the journey towards best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. I'm the Rosetta Stone of healthcare. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in the awesome circus of healthcare. Let's make some sense of all of this. I've known the Keeney family for half a century. They were my second family and my safe haven during my high school and college years. I've paid the gift of them forward several times in my life. Gratitude. Jerry was my high school teacher and Peggy, a feminist and an artist. They folded me into their family. They opened my eyes to women's lib, and they nurtured me as I faced my dysfunctional family, drugs, the Vietnam War, and frankly, my confused self. I drove from Mexico to Zihuatanejo, Mexico with Peggy and Jerry, the twins, Rebecca and Jennifer, and their sister Allison. I lived with them between travels and homes. I was living with them when my dad died. I was 19. Becky and Jenny, twins, were 11 or 12. Allie was 8 or 9. Jenny and Becky gave up their bedroom for me and moved in with Allie whenever I lived with them. I was so self-centered. I didn't realize that until recently, 45 years later. They never complained that they had to give their room up to me. We had a good chuckle about that. Rebecca Archer is a nurse supporting people with rare diseases. We regularly speak about our families, nursing, and advocacy. Jenny Keeney is a professional flautist and teacher. Allison Caffone works in human resources. I remember our trip to Mexico in 1969 or 1970. We lived there for several months. We were partying one night and Jerry got really drunk. He seldom drank more than a glass of wine. In the morning, he freaked out. He couldn't remember anything about the previous night. Losing his memory was his nightmare. Several years ago, I heard, "We're in trouble. Dad wanders off, gets lost. Mom won't accept any help." Jenny was living in Texas, Becky in Colorado, and Allie in Massachusetts. Peggy and Jerry had settled in northern Michigan. Jerry was physically fit with progressing dementia, and Peggy chain-smoked and was an alcoholic. Together, they're quite a team, Allie, Becky, and Jenny. They've gone through the gut-wrenching experience of trying to manage the physical and cognitive deterioration of their parents. How do you partner from a distance with reluctant parents? What's best for them? How do we maintain our boundaries as we help parents we love so much and make us so crazy? Becky and Jenny and I sat down together after a long day to chat. You can probably tell how exhausted we are. Hi, ladies. Oh, I'm so delighted to be sitting here with you guys. This is like a hoot and a half.
It is. It's like a movie, though. Feels like we're in a movie.
We're in a movie because we're sitting here with a mic. Okay, so I'm sitting with two of my oldest friends. What did we figure? 51 years? We've known each other 51 years. How do you introduce yourself in a social situation?
It depends on what the social situation is, I guess.
Okay.
But I guess I would say I'm Rebecca Archer. I am a mama of two sons and a nurse and a twin and a sister.
Okay. And how would you introduce yourself?
I'm Jennifer Keeney, and I am a person on this planet. I love being a twin and a sister, and I've been a musician for many, many years and a teacher.
Okay.
A flutist.
All right. So what do you remember first about us meeting?
Oh, what a good question. I don't know that I can remember exactly when I met you. I remember you hanging out with us. And I remember going on fun trips with you. And I remember being at the Unitarian Church with you.
And how old do you think you were?
I think that I was like 7-ish, 8-ish.
What do you remember?
I remember having like deep discussions with you. That like you were somebody I could talk to about things that I was thinking about that I never felt weird talking to you about them.
Wow. And I was all of what, 16? Yeah.
Well, but didn't we know you too when you were older too? You know, into your like more like around 20. Like you were always willing to talk about anything.
Anything.
You were always a storyteller, yeah. I feel like.
I'm here in, where am I? Golden, Colorado, visiting. And I came to visit you guys, and I came to visit your dad, Jerry, who's one of my oldest and dearest as well. But you guys know that I've been thinking a lot about what does it mean to be CEO of your health and your health care. And you guys are managing Jerry's care, and he has Alzheimer's. What's really delightful to me about his Alzheimer's is that he remembers me, being the selfish person that I am. I'm just delighted that he remembers me. I just think that's wonderful because he was so important to me. But it's really been a challenge. You guys have been through a lot managing.
I think
can you
one
tell
of the
me about that?
When you were just speaking, the one thing that just flashed to me is that we don't really know that he has Alzheimer's. When I was running today, I was thinking, God, like, how do you even know for sure that somebody has Alzheimer's right now or dementia or whatever it is mm-hmm. that people have, and how important is that really or not important? But okay. He definitely has symptoms, like you're saying, of, you know, cognitive memory loss. And,
yes.
And it's really, really kind of sudden to us, I would say.
Okay.
He was diagnosed in 2013 with dementia.
Okay.
According to our like health records, they were surprised that it was just progressing very, very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why that I was told anyways that I remember that they're not diagnosing him with Alzheimer's is because that usually is a change in personality. They still keep calling it dementia because he hasn't like gone to an extreme in his personality.
Yes. I mean, he's very much himself.
I agree.
I think about it a lot because I think having Alzheimer's is going to be so much different.
Yes.
Than somebody with dementia. And not that it's not. Yeah. But anyway.
And that they can't really do much about any of it anyways.
Right.
Which is so frustrating to me.
It is. You wish there was a pill or a magic bullet or a something.
I wish there was some way to know when people have memory issues that, you know, is this, what is kind of, I guess I wish there was more people that could help with you understanding that and what things you might be able to do to better navigate it and to have those conversations with your parents, you know, like that we just never got to really have that conversation with them.
So have mm-hmm. that conversation before it happens.
Or even when it's starting to happen.
Starting. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Because then you can't be CEO of your health.
Yes. So do you guys feel like you are the CEO of his health? Or do one of you?
I think all three of us are right now.
All three of us, including mm-hmm. Allison, mm-hmm. your younger sister.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we're all doing different things.
Oh, say more about that. So what are you doing?
Well, I feel like I'm kind of like a daily like care person with
yes.
him and like, you know, so I can see how he's doing on a daily basis mm-hmm. and check in with the people that are caring for him there and just manage his needs as far as daily living mm-hmm. goes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what's your role?
I think my role is to be a daughter to my dad mm-hmm. and to provide to be able to have that I've been able to provide a place for my sister to be here and for us to be close to my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely, I think, to make some big decisions, you know, as a trio.
And so big decisions, mm-hmm. like, where's he going to live?
Yeah, we all have been doing that. That's, you know, like trying to navigate three people doing it.
Right.
Taking care of one person.
What's Allie's role in that?
Yeah, because it's like our specific roles, I feel like, is what I said, you know, mm-hmm. but then there's other roles too. But Allie just financially, like she's really taking care of the finances.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's interesting because my sister Jackie and Jessica, we had a similar, like I was the healthcare person. My sister was the business person, and my sister Jackie, mm-hmm. and Jessica, who lived in San Diego, was the day-to-day, mm-hmm. spending time together, taking care of the day-to-day stuff, where Jackie and I lived in Boston. So, mm-hmm. you know, my mom was in San Diego. So that role, I think once we realized and accepted that we had different roles, you know, we had different strengths and, like, you know, that was made it so much more. Let's put it this way. We had a lot of tension before we figured out that we had different roles and that was good, that it was one thing. But, you know, like if we were hoping the other would be different, that was, that's when we knocked heads and, you know, that was hard. But once we okay, we have different roles. Mm-hmm. I can't expect Jessica to manage her healthcare. She is her companion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be her companion. I have no desire to be her companion. You know, I didn't want to take care of business. Thank God Jackie took care of business. So, I mean, it was like fortunate that it sort of naturally, I don't know if it was naturally, it was arduous, but you know, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been, like, you think, for me, like, you think it's going to be this way, but then something else happens, and it's going to be this way, and then you thought you were going to be able to do that, and then that didn't work out, so then you're like, here's another idea.
Right.
Let's try this and see if it works out. Well, that worked out for a little bit, and then you're like, well, but that person's life is really stressful now, and that we're going to change it this way now, and just like Becky expressed so well, I think, you know, she's providing so many things and I'm providing so many things. And Allie is like, I don't think anybody's not doing a lot to help my dad.
Yeah, right. So what kinds of decisions have you been faced with?
I think if you go like three years back, we knew and felt that they weren't able to care for themselves. Our parents weren't able to care for themselves well together. And so you go back to that period of time of even trying to figure out just how to have that conversation with people that really don't want to have that conversation with you.
Yeah.
So that was like...
At all.
Yeah.
No interest in
like
it.
Like when mom, we would show up, she wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't let us come visit.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let us in the door.
So, we would get to the door. They wouldn't let us in the door even. Wow. So, I mean, that's
well,
how...
Dad would, but mom wouldn't.
Sort of. He didn't like... He wasn't out there to greet us.
No. he wasn't aware of what was going on.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you could get to him.
Yeah. So first it's knowing that there's something that's going on and you feel like for their health and safety, certain things be good if certain things happened.
So, yeah. I mean, and so I think that brings up, you know, like the three of us talking and trying to figure out like, do we think this is a priority at this time? Is it our business to do anything about
it? Yes. So the ethics of it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was just huge.
Yeah. So,
for
say
years,
a little
it was
more
like,
about that.
So just one of us would have more of a desire maybe to intervene
mm-hmm.
than the others. So you got to talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, and then maybe having that intervention and getting, you know, some recognition from our parents. Yes. You know, we finally got some recognition from parents. Yes, this is something we're interested in. And the minute you leave, it's done, you know, because none of us live near them.
Yeah.
Right? And they're very...
And that you that you all lived a distance away.
Your
parents were not easy. Living in northern Michigan was a tough...
I mean, getting to Detroit and driving 6 hours,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just... So geography played a role in this.
Yeah, and we all don't live near each other.
Right.
Too, so...
Right, so we had Austin, Colorado, and Boston. Yeah, okay. So sort of like, yeah.
Like you, yeah.
That's, crazy. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so there's... So, something's not right.
Yeah.
Things don't feel safe. How do we love them and not be... too overwhelming, but things are deteriorating.
Yeah, to me, like, the tipping point was, because, I mean, I might be, you know, wrong about this, but my feeling was, like, Becky and I just were like, it's their life.
Yeah.
They get to choose how they want to live it. We wouldn't want to live that way. Mm-hmm. We would want somebody helping us. That kind of a thing is kind of how I remember it. And I definitely felt that way until I felt like my dad could not, because of his memory and stuff, he was not able to care for him, make those choices for himself anymore. And, you know, when I felt like that, that's when I was like, I want to do something.
Yeah.
Because he didn't get to make that choice anymore. Mom was making all the choices.
Okay.
And, you know, her choices weren't his choices health-wise ever.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, I felt like they got along just pretty darn well. But he always wanted to go to the doctor. He wanted to go take care of himself. He did take care of himself until he couldn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, but you know what I was thinking too, that is related to that, is like when you say like CEO of your own house, like how many people really like, do you really know somebody well enough, you know, besides knowing yourself well enough to take care of your own health? But do you really know that? Have you really had that conversation with somebody and really listened to them, like how they want to take care of their health?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we didn't have that opportunity.
Okay.
Really,
so
with my mom for sure, or dad a little bit, I feel like I did, just because he would talk about it. Mm-hmm. He liked to do his yoga. He liked to ride his bike.
So knowing what was important in their life and supporting their, meeting their goals. I get it. I mean, even I find talking to Anne about end of life or even what we want in our lives, it's a challenging conversation, because I might say something like, if I can't function and enjoy life, I just want to go and I want to stay home. And she's like, well, I hear you and I'll try to respect that. But, you know, I might not have what it takes. I was shocked when I heard that. And then I thought, well, she's right. She's being realistic. Sometimes you can do it and sometimes you can't.
You see us shaking our heads vigorously over here, because you can't know what it's like until you're faced with that.
Yes.
So I think she's being very honest. Like, she's doing her best to respect that in every way, but she also realizes that,
Who knows?
There's certain things that, you know, we thought we would be able to do it, you know, have our dad live here, and we couldn't stay up all night, you know, waking up 5 times a night and always having to have somebody by his side.
Okay. Could you take a moment and like recap that?
So basically what happened, you know, less than a year ago is, we knew that, my mom would not take phone calls. So it got to the point where we couldn't call anybody. We had no idea what was happening with them.
She went
huge, like the worst storm of ever, pretty much. Blizzard conditions. We knew they couldn't even get out. So
she wouldn't ever hand the phone to dad or anything, even, because he couldn't use a phone. So we hadn't talked to him like in 3 months or more.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, so what happened is, we decided it had to be like a little bit of a rescue mission and get out there and just see what was really happening. So we did, and it was really horrific. So like Jenny was saying before, we were of the mindset, hey, you know, we're just going out there to see how we can honor their choices, how we can make life simpler for them if at all possible, mm-hmm. but we didn't have any intention of moving them.
No, anywhere. Setting up some services or something.
Okay.
Yeah. And just, you know, checking in her dad. Mm-hmm. So,
and mom, but we didn't know if we'd get to see her.
Yeah, we didn't know if she'd let us in the door. So, but it turned out to be something that was good and bad all at once because we realized that they would not accept services. My dad would have, but she would not. And so she would block it. And she proved that while we were there. Like she'd pretend like she would. And then just how bad everything. Oh gosh, it was just so bad. It was so bad. And we had no idea that my dad's memory was so impaired and that she was really just worn out. I mean, she was doing everything for him. And he relied on her 100%, and she was just worn out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we finally got to the point where we were able to have the conversation. Yes, she is worn out. She really does want to move near one of us. She wants to accept our help, but she's scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
So from that point,
and we had help, like with a social worker, and a nurse was there, and a PT person,
and an OT person, yeah. and everything like mm-hmm. that. And they all were trying to do what they could, but it was mm-hmm.
they just knew they weren't. Mom would derail them.
Yeah.
The social worker said he'd never seen anybody in all. He was like been working for like 40 years and never seen anybody as strong-willed as my mom.
Yeah, she was a force.
She was. She's that's what he said. And he liked her too. She's never going to get right. with the game here. Program.
So what we ended up having to do was make these decisions and, you know, work through all the legal parts and everything like that. But my dad was very clear about one thing. He wanted to live by his daughters and he wanted his wife near him, but he was very clear that he wanted health, you know, he wanted health care. He wanted to be going to the doctors. He wanted to live near family.
And he wanted to be out of the snow. He yeah. kept telling us he did not want to live in the cold.
Yeah. He was done with the cold. So we ended up having to take my dad first to Texas. And Jenny really wanted our parents to be there, and we wanted them to be somewhere warm. And my mom was in agreement, but she was going to wait till spring to come.
And this was January.
Okay. Yeah. So this was, so then your dad came first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's when we realized, well, so my dad came first. We were setting up apartment for them.
We had to do all the legal stuff. I mean, because I think it's interesting to people. I mean, we had to get the power of attorney signed and all that kind of stuff because,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, yeah, so we moved. Allie was going to take my dad at the last minute. She couldn't. I must have been on how many plane trips? I travel almost every week for my work. I was like, I think I did like 7 or 8, you know, plane trips in this year period of time. Because so then Jenny, Allie was there for a while. We all took turns going there. So we've all
Michigan places. She's talking about.
Yeah.
Still Michigan, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
During the snowstorm.
Yeah.
And they were stuck there in a blizzard.
Yeah.
So we were stuck there. Finally got dad.
So I flew back again, and then we got dad back
to Austin.
To Austin. Jenny, in the meantime, was looking at a million apartments, trying to find places for them, setting up the apartment, because we thought they could live on their own near Jenny.
In the same apartment complex, I got them an apartment, because mm-hmm. that's what they wanted. Mom, we gave mom two choices, basically. It kind of came down to that. We're like, she wasn't able to really make choices very well anymore. And so we just like, okay, these are the two best choices. You can have an apartment near Jenny, or you can have this assisted care places. I looked at like 27 of them.
Oh my goodness.
So we get dad there. And needless to say, that was not going to work.
Right.
You know,
right. He was so way better than.
You're like, this is like a massive project management.
Thank you.
Plus a huge emotional exhaustion and disruption of everything in your life.
Yeah. And like you said, we all had our jobs.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and Jenny had her hands totally full with dad trying to manage it. Allie like quit her job. And was full time, you know, trying to help with
manage everything too.
Yeah. And my job was at that time calling my mom every day and coaching her towards making some teeny tiny steps towards getting ready to leave. And And so that ended up with her leaving earlier. She got very, very depressed, mm-hmm. you know. And we, you know, tried to set up all kinds of things for her. But and so then...
she wouldn't accept any help except for from one friend, Bill Twitty. Remember mm-hmm. Bill?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He would bring her wine and smokes.
Mm-hmm. And some food.
And some food.
So, but anyway, so then we got... So then we went... So then Allie was... We had this whole plan mm-hmm. that Allie was going to go back to my mom and fly her back to Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it didn't work out so good, so I had to fly back again to Michigan and get on the plane with those two.
Allie
and get
just
them
couldn't
back
handle
Austin.
It. It was hard. That's too hard.
It was really hard because this is the thing. We, our mother, who has never been to the doctor, we had to get a signature from a doctor talking about not being able to be CEO of your own health, you know.
Before she could go into the assisted care.
Before she could go into assisted care. Oh. You know, you needed somebody to say.
Right, right.
Yeah. And her blood pressure was like 230 over 110.
Oh, my God.
And
sorry. It's one of those things we were talking about. It's funny.
We have a genetic disease. Yeah. So we have polycystic kidney disease.
Okay.
We did not know that.
I didn't know that.
Until about 7 years ago.
I think we're 43. Yeah.
Okay. So, no, long time, more than that. Then. But anyways, my mom has it.
Oh, okay.
And so because she never, you know, has gone to the doctor, she didn't realize, you know, uh-huh. that she had this hypertension.
Wow.
Related to that. So.
Oh, my God.
So
this cascading.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now a word about our sponsor, Abridge. Help make coordination of care easier with Abridge. Push the big pink button and record the conversation with your doctors. Read the transcript or listen to clips when you get home. Share it. Abridge was created by patients, doctors, and caregivers. Check out the app at abridge.com. ABRIDGE.com or download it on the Apple app or Google Play Store. Record your health conversations. Let me know how it went.
So let me ask you just a really different question.
Yeah.
So what does healthy look like to you now?
For me or for somebody else?
When you think about healthy,
what's
a picture of healthy?
I think like there's health and wellness.
Okay. Yeah.
And I would say health is more like physiologic.
Okay.
And wellness is how you feel overall.
Okay.
You know, so health is a piece of being well.
Okay.
To me. And it's definitely what you think it is. What healthy is what it means to you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's your perception mm-hmm. and your perception is physical, and I'm putting words in your mouth so you can change those words. It's cultural, it's historical, it's mental, spiritual,
emotional.
So what it is, emotional. Too. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do you think?
Yeah, to me, it's a personal thing for me, like how I feel good, how I feel healthy. Mm-hmm. I would say it has a lot to do with how I feel emotionally and mentally mm-hmm. and spiritually. But physically, if I feel like I definitely feel my best mm-hmm. when that part of my side is balanced out with the rest of it.
When the physical
when I feel like I'm taking care of my body,
okay,
too, not just kind of ignoring it or right. whatever, you know.
Do you think your perception of that has changed in this year of sort of?
I got to add one more thing to that.
Please,
your social connections. I think that's a huge, huge part of your overall wellness.
Okay,
and that's what. Our parents lost a lot.
And they lost because they were so isolated.
Yeah.
Both geographically and personally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And from you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a big part of our decision, that Dad had no ability to have any kind of socialization.
Yeah. It's pretty dramatic what you guys have been through.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk about, my wife and I about thinking about making decisions, but like you said, you've really had like a cascade of craziness.
We used to always say, because Jenny and I, because of what we thought, we're like, you know what? They've lived how they've always wanted to live.
Yeah.
That is for sure. They lived the lives that they wanted to live. However, they're not letting us in. So it's going to be house cards. Like when things go wrong, I was always like.
You and Ellie would talk about that, I know.
A lot.
They would be like, it's.
No, she wouldn't. No, Ellie didn't want it like that, though.
Oh, she didn't want it like that. I hear what you're saying. No, yeah. But you and Ellie would say it's going to be a house of cards if we don't do stuff about it.
Okay.
And Becky and I were like, it's going to be what it's going to be.
Okay.
Like, it's not our choice. Right. Our choice is, do we want to help? Yeah.
And Ellie what?
She wanted to try to do everything she could to prevent that from happening.
Yes, right.
But it just, to us, it's like, man, we've been trying forever.
Yeah.
And I don't see that happening, so I think it gave me solace thinking, I gotta be okay with this. This is what they've chosen.
Right.
So
respecting, so the challenge of watching people make choices that you wouldn't make and seem unsafe and observing a decreasing ability to make choices at all dramatically with your dad and then very suddenly with your mom. Mm-hmm. So then making that, hitting that threshold, okay, now we have to intervene. Things have so deteriorated. It's time to intervene. And then it's like, you're trying stuff. It's like this, now it's a whole different experiment. Then it was experiment of supporting them in whatever decisions. And then it's an experiment of what's the right situation now when you have more control.
And, the thing that's interesting about that too, that really flipped my mom was that we said, it's either the state's going to come in because that's what they told us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think I was the one that said to her, I was like, I'm sure you'd rather have us come in than the state.
Yeah.
Of course, she told me it was threatening her and stuff, but I was just like, it's true. I'm like, it's the truth though. And it did change her because, she realized that some part of her realized that was going to happen. And so she chose us.
Right. So then I'm going to short circuit the story a little bit. Your dad moved to Austin, then your mom came and was here for a week or two, or how long was she here? I'm in Golden, Colorado. How long was she in Austin?
She moved into the assisted care with dad, and she was there a few months she passed away.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
basically she still got to do what she wanted to do, which is be with dad and be in a warm climate. It was spring.
Yeah.
And she, but she really had COPD really badly. And she even, like I told you, tried to stop drinking and smoking, but.
Yeah.
And she didn't suffer that long, but then she was just in the hospital for a few hours. And then she passed away.
Yeah. Wow. That must have been totally flipped out for your dad. They were totally in love.
Yeah. He always says, she was the love of my life.
Love of my life. I just remember on the day that we had to tell him that she died, he just kept saying, I've had bad things happen to me in my life, but nothing like this.
Yeah.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. That's what he said.
And he was just howling, crying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
But then he'd forget.
Oh. So then he had to relive it? Like over and over.
And so there's another decision. This is the reason why I'm bringing it up, because we were instructed two ways. There's a lot of people that think when you have dementia that it's just cruel to keep telling them that somebody died because they're reliving it every single time, like it was fresh.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, we just felt like he still sort of understood enough to know.
Well, I was there today and we talked a bunch and we talked, I think we probably talked two or three times about Peggy. And he was pretty matter of fact.
I think he doesn't remember anymore.
He's he asked when you guys left.
Oh.
When he's really, really tired, every once in a while he'll say, "Where's Peggy?"
Okay.
But he isn't reactive to mom anymore.
Okay.
But that was the choice.
Okay.
Like when we still felt like he knew and that he had the right to grieve.
Yeah.
This was our feeling. And so we did that, and then we tried just saying she was out on errands because it was so horrible for him. Mm-hmm. And so we did that for a while. I mean,
even before she got down there.
Yeah.
Where's Peggy? Where's Peggy? Where's Peggy? We would tell her, but he just didn't understand. So then we had to say, she's at an art class with her friends. You know, she went on a retreat.
That's the only kind of times like she did stuff away from him. So we were trying to think.
But I mean, it was like 15 times a day.
Yeah.
That he would ask. Right. About my mom.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So then you had the bright idea of...
trying to figure out what to do next.
What to do next. And you decided... So, Jenny, you had a career and a life in Austin. And Becky, you're here with a house. And you made a decision to open your house to your dad and your sister, and you decided
to... And I have two sons, too.
And you have two sons. Yes, okay, thank you. And you uprooted your life, Jenny, and moved to... came here to Colorado, thinking that you would... he would live here. And then that was a challenging situation, too.
And I think part of it, you know, that... looking at it now, too, is like we were all just so exhausted.
Yes.
From January to May.
Yeah.
And then, and you know, well, frankly, trying the best we could. Yeah. That was our plan, you know. Everybody wanted to live like a family and just try to take care of them. And I would be the main caregiver. And
right.
Yeah. But
you know, when my grandmother, when Oma... moved to San Diego with my mom, mm-hmm. and she was really depressed and living in an assisted living place. Mm-hmm. And we were living in West Virginia, and we brought her to our place, put an addition on the house, brought her. We just thought, same thing, naive as hell, and thought she'll be with family and everything will be wonderful. And we didn't know what it was like to live with a clinically depressed person. Mm-hmm. And it was, oh my goodness, it was so stressful. But I appreciate this. You were planning and you are figuring that this is the right thing to do. And you take a shot at something and it doesn't turn out pretty much anything like you thought it would. Yeah. And so then once again, you're exhausted and you're making this really big change. Mm-hmm. You know, all three of you and mm-hmm. your sons, and it's not the same. And so.
It sort of was the backup plan.
Yeah.
We did, like you said, we did plan.
Yes.
I mean, like, okay, if this for some reason doesn't work out, we know that there's this great place that Becky's had friends, parents there.
The assisted living.
Golden Pond. Yeah, where he is now.
Memory where he is now, which seems like a really nice place. Yeah. What do you think, if you were going to give words of wisdom to anybody else who's facing something remotely similar, what's your thoughts? What are the lessons that you've learned so far in this?
I would say, like, one of the first things would be, like, to really brainstorm with your, you know, if you have siblings or whoever you think is going to have to make these decisions maybe at some point mm-hmm. for, you know, parents, mm-hmm. if we're just talking about that, you know, yeah. It could be lots of different people. But,
right.
But like really just brainstorm and be willing to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, what do we think this looks like? I know right. It might be a really long time from now or it might happen tomorrow. You know what right. I mean? But just be really open to talking more
yeah.
about that and exploring that option.
You know, that's an interesting, what that suggests to me is, again, I feel like it doesn't really matter what you come up with because it won't happen. but just that you've greased the wheels of thinking about it. So you've had a cycle or two of chewing on a scenario and you figure out how to talk to each other about it. And then once something happens and life happens, mm-hmm. Is that sort of a description of what
really
you're
is.
Suggesting?
And like even like a lot of my friends around here, you know, mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends that are like 10 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, you know, what's your advice? What, you know, mm-hmm. you guys have been through so much. I know it's good. I'm going to be yeah. there one day. And so I say that. Mm-hmm. And then I say, and you know what? If you're up for it, I really think just try to have these hard conversations with your parents.
Yeah.
Really try to. And if anything, like just for your own peace of mind, try to get all their documents in place.
Okay.
Because that is just like a major headache.
Right.
Peace.
Okay.
Like, you know.
Yeah, Allie really, oh man, she's just done so many mm-hmm. hours and hours and hours of work on that.
Okay. And mm-hmm. so what are.
I feel like that's one, I mean, personally for me, that's one of the things that helps me feel at peace is I feel like my sisters and I really did brainstorm and really worked through this really as well as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And still are.
Yeah.
And I think I feel so fortunate that we are willing to have these hard conversations a lot mm-hmm. with each other.
Yeah.
And we did the best we could with my parents.
Yeah.
And
you guys really
are.
Trust each other. That's one thing that's really apparent. To me, you know, you've always trusted each other. So yeah. that's, you know, whatever you, mm-hmm. you know,
oh, yeah.
your sister. So you've
all
got
really
issues.
Good. Yeah. But I mean, I no, deep down so trust true. Them with it. Yeah, I do.
Cause I think when you talk to other people too, I mean, that's what they say. It's like a lot of it is a sibling issue.
Yeah.
Because you can't make somebody, I mean,
right.
You cannot make somebody else do something, but you can talk to your siblings.
Right.
You know, and maybe find out, hey, you know, this is never going to work out because
yeah.
we are so divided
yeah.
on this. So how are we going to navigate this?
Okay.
You know, ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I would say that. Yeah. I think it's, I still feel like it's, you try to have those conversations, like I was saying, mm-hmm. like, and see if you can listen. To and get to know if you mm-hmm. care about that person that you feel like you might be caretaking sometime mm-hmm. or helping with their life.
How do you guys take care of yourselves?
Right.
Like, frankly,
right now,
both of you look exhausted to me.
Yeah.
And so how do you heal? How do you take care of yourselves? You guys are, I mean, you're both busy. You have busy lives. You have careers.
I think friends are really important. My friends are super important. My physical health is really important to me. Mm-hmm. And I try to do.
Yeah, I see you're out. You're still running.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
You told me today I'm going to run clear my mind.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do a lot of things. I just remember my dad always saying that, too, when he got to the point of retirement. I'm like, Dad, so what are you doing? And he's like, you know, it's pretty much a full-time job just taking care of myself, you know?
Yeah.
But one of my hardest decisions is just getting out of the shower every morning. So I remember that so vividly.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it just, I think, you know, I try to be gentle on myself, too, because I feel like, this has been a really intense period of time. So, you know, and do the things I love to do.
Yeah.
You know,
how about you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I'm just trying to learn like what I can, cause I came here to help my dad,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause I wanted to. And so I'm trying to learn how to do that and how to start my career again, mm-hmm. and how to have enough energy to just do those two things,
right.
as well as, you know, take care of my dog and mm-hmm. myself. And mm-hmm. yeah. And,
wow.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm still, you know, figuring that out.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of, it's different than just living with my, by myself.
Right.
Taking care of me.
Right.
You know, in my yeah. life. So I feel like it's a lot. You
it
know,
is
and,
a lot.
And I feel like super hyper made our my relationship with my sisters too, because mm-hmm. because we are all caring for Dad.
Yeah.
And so
your,
it's like
your lives are turned on its head.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And they have, you know, their own families too. So mm-hmm. their children.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for me, yeah. I'm figuring it out again. I feel like about this whole thing. I just feel like when you ask like what are you doing right now? I just feel like I'm learning.
Yeah, you're learning.
I
yeah.
have learned so much in the last, you know,
yeah.
9 months or whatever.
So tell me two things.
Being patient.
Being oh, patient, being patient.
And about that I don't know anything.
And what?
That I really don't know
yeah.
much about like a disease state or something.
Yeah.
Really. I know a lot about my dad, but mm-hmm. I don't know about how his body has been affected by this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He's frail. Well, he's 88, so mm-hmm. he has a right to be frail.
Well, it's all right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
I love this family. I'm grateful that Jerry remembers me. When I see him, we cry and pat each other. He asks me every couple of minutes how long we've known each other. 51 years, Jerry, I tell him. He nods. I read excerpts from Roughing It by Mark Twain to him. He chuckled at the passages about the jackass rabbit. He's a dedicated crossword puzzler. He corrects me on my distant memories. I send him a 60-second video clip every couple of weeks. The selective impact of dementia amazes me. Jerry has three daughters who love each other and care for him. My mom had three children who cared for her. Jerry has some money. My mom had some money. We can all afford to care. So many can't. Making decisions for others is easier for some, hard for others. It wasn't easy for the Keeneys. I tried to talk about end of life with my mom and her husband, Bill, twice a year for about 15 years. Oh, no cigar. It was worth the try. When Bill got sick, my mom became a born-again end-of-life planner. Thank God. But it was still tough when she was dying. And she had all her faculties until the end. Physically healthy and cognitively absent has been a different puzzle. I'm grateful to be tangentially part of this one. Love you, Keeneys all. See the show notes, previous podcasts, and other resources on my website, www.health-hats.com/pod. Please subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks. See you around the block.